The themes and the content discussed in this programme may be of an adult nature. It is not suitable for younger ears.
Live and local.
After the Watershed with Alison Ferns and BB Lynch.
I have a feeling it's certainly not going to be suitable for younger ears this evening.
Well, the words you've been throwing out at me during your research period, I'm shocked.
I think you're right. It's going to be another night where I learn lots of new terminology.
Every day's a school day.
We are tonight exploring the fetish scene. I guess I should start by asking whether or not you have any.
A fetish?
Yeah.
Me?
Anything?
Feta cheese?
Right. Apart from that?
No.
I don't. But it does fascinate me because I think, you know, we're
or
all...
do I?
Well, that's the thing. You don't know. By the end of the show, you might find out you do.
Live and local.
After the Watershed with Alison Ferns and BB Lynch.
And that's a serious point, really, because one person's fetish might be another person's norm.
Yeah. I mean, what is a fetish, I guess? What defines it? What's the difference between that and a kink? Is there a kink? Is there a difference between kink and fetish?
I think they're the same. According to Wikipedia, which is where I always turn.
You must quote it.
When
yes.
We're not sure about anything. Yes. A sexual fetishism is a sexual fixation on a non-living object or a non-genital body part. The object of interest is called the fetish, and the person who has a fetish for that object is a fetishist.
Say it again.
No, you're all right. We're joined by Stu Nugent, who is... Hello, Stu. Thank you so much for joining us. I was going to say you're a fetish expert, but I'm not sure how you feel about that. You are manager at Lalo. Lalo are an intimate lifestyle company. You make sex toys.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
And also we euphemise.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. Now, you've done a bit of research in this area. Perhaps not you personally, but as a company. And you've actually come up with the top five fetishes.
Well, that's right. And as BB mentioned a moment ago, it's kind of hard to define exactly where the boundaries are between kinks and fetishes. The definition that you just read is the clinical definition, which isn't quite the same as the way we feel about it inside the community.
Right.
There are grey areas, which are kind of fun to explore. That's kind of half the excitement about it. But there are some definable fetishes which are more popular than others, for example, which are, you know, safe to talk about.
Yeah, because there was International Fetish Day. Quite a March. When
there's a day for everything.
There's everything. But so we had the top five, like, to talk about there. So before we do that, no, let's go into that because I want to hear. Yeah, go on, top five.
Okay, so... It's hard to classify, and we tend to break them down into groups and then into smaller groups. So, for example, there was a recent study of about 48,000 members of fetish communities around the world, which registered which fetishes were the most popular. And if you go to different regions and different communities, occasionally the fetishes is that they're slightly different from people to people, but there are general ways that we can group them together. So the most popular one overall is a fetish towards clothing of one kind or another.
Right. So like rubber, leather...
Actually, no.
No?
That's interesting, though, because rubber is the second most popular fetish.
Right.
So to define the term fetish, what we're talking about specifically is not so much a lifestyle or a feeling. A fetish, the word fetish, is applied specifically to a physical object which doesn't necessarily have sexual connotations, but we project them onto it.
Okay.
So
so when you say clothing,
yeah,
items of clothing,
yeah, generally the most popular one is stockings.
Okay. Yeah.
Ah, getcha.
Yeah, you go stockings, and then it's shoes generally.
See, that's interesting because there'll be lots of men listening, I'm sure. Yeah. Perhaps even women who do get turned on by stockings, yet they wouldn't term that as having a fetish, would they?
That's right. Yeah. In fact, that speaks to something very profound about this conversation. Men tend to have fetishes while women don't quite so much. Like, if you consider a fetish to be the sexualization of an object or a sensation that isn't necessarily sexual, that's how we might define a fetish. Men have them much more frequently than women. So there is a difference. You're absolutely right, where a woman might find stockings sexy, whereas a man might fetishize them. That's a huge overgeneralization, obviously. But
I like this.
Show Stu your trousers.
Oh, no, don't. Right. She's doing me in, right? Okay, I went and bought a new pair of trousers today. And I forgot when I bought them that we were doing a show all about fetishism. And I have bought myself a pair of suede trousers.
See?
Now, that's not a fetish, is it? Brilliant.
Funnily enough,
brilliant.
That's the fifth most popular fetish.
Get away!
Not strictly that material, just an attraction to soft. Tactile
see,
materials.
I do have a fetish and I didn't even know.
I knew you did. Stu, what's the fetish for buildings? You know, people marry like the Eiffel... People get turned on by the Eiffel Tower.
Are you kidding me?
The Shard.
Is that because they're sort of phallic in
erections,
nature?
They're lovely buildings.
There's a lot of work gone into them. I think that's what we're attracted to. It's like the architecture.
Yes, right.
Sure. I'm sure that's what people are attracted to.
What's that called? Are people into that? Oh, I don't know. But they are into it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, very much so. People find themselves attracted to all sorts of unusual things, and buildings are a really good example. Particularly the Eiffel Tower, which has a number of people petition the French government every year to try to marry it. So there's a transition beyond the sexual.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. See, I'd never heard of that. I knew people had fetishes when it comes to, like, you know, bondage. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the film 50 Shades of Grey. That kind of almost, I think, made it more mainstream. I don't know what you think, Stuart, but I think that opened it up to a lot of people who were probably quite naive to it up until that point. We have got a little bit of a clip from that we can listen to.
I don't do romance. My tastes are very singular. You wouldn't understand.
Your boyfriend has a reputation. Do you want to be kept or have respect?
Do you think you're the first woman who tried to save him? He's changing. It's not what he wants anymore, but it's what he needs.
Do you know what? With me and my suede trousers and the fact that I'm quite attracted to Christian Grey, maybe I found more in the fetish scene than I realised. Yeah. I don't know.
But wasn't that film more about subdom rather than fetish?
Yeah, there's a big difference. Fetish and kink tend to be conflated into the same kind of bubble, when in fact they're two kind of distinct things. Like, there's two interesting ways to think about it, which I think explains it quite well. The first one, the difference between a kink and a fetish... kink is kind of like an overarching umbrella term which can incorporate fetish,
right?
But a kink isn't necessarily a fetish.
So what's an example of a kink?
Okay, so think of it like
Ray
this.
Davis.
Well, let's take 50 Shades as a good example, okay, because this is what mainstreamified, if that's a word, the phenomenon. Let's imagine that you want to enter into a DS relationship. A DS in this instance...
Hang on. I'm not good with terminology. Okay, right. You'll learn this, Stu. DS, that is...
That's dominance and submission.
Dominance and submission.
Yes.
Okay.
Usually if you see it shorthand, it's usually written with a capital D, a slash, and then a small s.
Ah, so today when I was doing my research, I came across the term BDSM a lot. So is that something different, or that's the same?
That's largely the same. BDSM is an unusual acronym where it's not actually four words in BDSM, it's six.
Oh, so someone BDSM, didn't do the maths.
I know, right? we do everything with the lights off, you know, it's hard to... BDSM stands for bondage and discipline, then dominance and submission, and then sadism and masochism. So it's not...
They're all together,
it's a big group of things.
Okay.
But the difference between a fetish and a kink, especially with respect to 50 Shades, is imagine that you were interested in that kind of lifestyle and you were seeking out a dom, someone to have power, and you're interested in being restrained. The difference is that the attraction to being restrained is a kink. It's something that you're attracted to for the complexity of the psychology behind it.
Okay. You know, it's not to a bit of rope.
Right. When you're attracted to the bit of rope, that's a fetish.
I've got it.
There you go. Write that down.
I've got it.
Rope.
And it's funny. Rope is a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
There's all sorts of websites dedicated to rope.
No, that's a tug of war.
No,
looking at tug of war site. That's a whole different thing, Ali.
It's big business.
Come on. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm really interested in that when you talk about the community. So, because I appear to be in the sex world at the moment.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm not having it anyway. It's I'm hearing about it a lot. Are there more people having fetishes, or are we just hearing about it more? Have they changed over the years, over the decades? Has social and online changed them?
I don't think it's a new phenomenon, no. I think that we seem to be able to communicate it about it in a way that we haven't really before, thanks to the internet and particularly social media, where kinky and fetishistic people seem to just gravitate towards each other.
I guess because prior to that, you would have been sat at home on your own thinking, oh, it's just me that's got a thing for rope.
Yeah. And a copy of Loot.
Do you know what I mean? Then you got on the internet and you're like, oh, look, there's lots of people who have this same thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like they don't just gravitate towards each other. I mean we. We also kind of support each other. Like the kink and fetish community is very good at self-policing and assuring each other that the things that we're talking about is safe to talk about.
You know? Why do they need self-policing? Are they illegal?
No. I mean, that's a little bit complex. What I mean by that is that occasionally, even in our community where we tend to be quite literate regarding issues of sexuality, liberalism, consent, these kind of difficult topics, we're slightly ahead of the curve and we need to protect each other in a way that sometimes the law doesn't.
That would be, though, for me personally, a bit of a concern, because once you start pushing the boundaries as to what is normal, it could be easy then, couldn't it, to cross the line so something stops being a fetish or a thing, and I don't know, someone could get hurt.
Yeah, that's always a risk. That's why the real key, what it comes down to, is communication. The key to any good kinky relationship or any fetishistic interest is the ability to be able to express your concerns with each other and speak openly. That's why safe words are so important, for example. Like, if you use a safe word, it doesn't necessarily mean the thing you're doing has to stop. It just means, let's take a break and talk about this and I'll see if I'm comfortable to continue afterwards.
I assume hard is a bad safe word.
Yeah, you just have to be careful with what you chose. Have you used a safe word before?
Not as such, no.
No. Do you have a fetish, can I ask?
Yeah.
I'm slightly different. I'm more on the kink side than the fetish side.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. Can you talk about that?
Or... I guess so.
Well, no, I don't want to, if you don't feel comfortable, you don't have to.
Of course.
Tell me.
Ignore me, you don't have to if you don't want to, Stu.
Okay,
you obviously do, though.
No, absolutely not. Like, what progress we've made where we're able to have this conversation live on the BBC. Eh? We should be proud of ourselves. Okay, where to start? What would you like to know?
What's your kink?
I consider myself a relatively dominant sexual partner.
Okay.
I'm also straight, so I have a female partner who considers herself submissive. And the attraction to it for us is not not so much the role play. Like, we don't see each other as opposites. We're more two sides of the same coin, where it's mutually supportive. And the pleasure that we derive from it is the complexity, the psychological kind of exploring each other.
I love all this. How did you know this? How did this come to you, if I may
I've never
term.
Not known.
Really? What do you mean?
Yeah, it's... I don't know. It's innate, I think. For a lot of people. A lot of people pick up their... Particularly when it comes to fetishes rather than kink, and if we need to define that again, like, maybe we should drop down on it. a lot of people know it before they hit adolescence, for example. A lot of people develop it during adolescence, and for other people, a smaller percentage of people, it develops in their later years. But the more articulate people that I speak to, that I interact with, who really understand their kinks and understand the dynamics of their relationships, are people who've never known anything else, really.
So did you specifically look for a partner who you knew was A, submissive, and B, into this scene?
Like I said, we kind of gravitate towards each other somehow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like a law of physics.
If we're talking about understanding the whole complexities, doesn't that take away a bit of the magic?
No, it adds to it, I think. How do we explain that? The magic, I think, let's compare two things. Let's compare a fast-moving casual relationship with a new partner that might last 3 months and then ends. Then compare that to the same duration of relationship where there's elements of DS, domination and submission. What tends to happen is that the couple who have casual sex and stay friends they just have sex. It's a physical thing. They enjoy it. They part ways. Perhaps they do it more and more often, and it just fades out. When it's a couple who are invested so heavily in each other emotionally, where they trust each other to, for example, when a dominant trusts their submissive to use their safe word when they really need to, and when a submissive trusts their dominant to look after them, we call it aftercare, after the sexual activity is finished, when that care is good, it's so much more intense than any, what we would call in inverted commas, vanilla relationship.
Oh, come on, Ali.
Vanilla. So I was asking Bibi earlier, what's finished? She said, wait, I'll tell you on air. It's not ice cream. Yeah, you see, but it could so easily be exploited, couldn't it? I mean, it obviously sounds like it works very well for you and your other half. But I suppose because I'm not in that world, when I hear you talk, I'm just being really honest, my initial instinct is, oh, but you're the dominant one, she's submissive. Right. Yeah. Does that mean you're kind of...
But that's
bullying her. And I don't mean to be offensive, but I'm just sort of trying to say what I can imagine a lot of people might be
But thinking. That's empowering to her as well, in that she can... She's saying what she wants and what she needs and what actually does it for her.
Yeah. And...
Yeah, there's a phenomenon actually called topping from the bottom. Which,
right, yes, get your pen out.
I don't know that term either.
Get your pen out.
It's a very common thing in which... the submissive partner actually is the one in control.
Yeah.
And it is empowering, I think. It's you're absolutely right, and the fact that we played 50 Shades a moment ago. Like, I love the soundtrack, thank God. It's got one saving grace. But
yeah, because that does come across people as quite an abusive relationship.
It's not a good representation.
It's not, no. No.
Which is a real shame.
It's so fascinating. I find it, it's so interesting. And also, I find it interesting that you're here talking about it on the radio. So I imagine in your day-to-day life, this is something you'd be very open about?
Yeah, it's, there's a few different kinds of relationship that you have.
Yeah.
For a couple who live the way that my partner and I live, we call ourselves living in the lifestyle, which means that you don't make any differentiation between, you kind of just absorb your sexual role as part of your
like breakfast
exactly. It's not a big thing. I wouldn't introduce
it's
myself
not a hidden
anyone.
Thing you just do on a Friday night,
right?
It's your life.
Yeah,
but is everyone okay with that? I mean, friends and family,
those that know.
But how does that manifest out of the bedroom?
Interesting ways. Yeah, that's the most fascinating and possibly the most lovely part of a relationship, like on the fringes of a normal relationship, normal in inverted commas again. For example, if one partner is being incredibly dominant and is trying to push the submissive partner a little bit and find a reaction and stimulate them in some ways, how do you then walk away from the bedroom, and how does the submissive partner, for example, tell the dominant to take the rubbish out?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yes.
When it comes back to real life.
Yeah. So how?
Just doing it. You know, just... Just forgetting that occasionally you don't need to be so serious about it, you know?
Honestly, and do you know what I love about it? Because it sounds so... some people could maybe describe the lifestyle as not normal, the inverted commas, but actually it seems like it can be deeper and more profound than the normal relationships.
Yeah, I agree.
I like the sound
of this. Vanilla's all right for most people.
So vanilla is very...
Me.
Is no.
Boring.
You're tutti frutti.
Most exciting.
You're rum and raisin.
Most exciting. Obviously, this is my friend. Most exciting thing is doing it when you know the Tesco delivery is due.
Oh. Oh, that's hot.
Is that
we've got another one.
Is that
got another one.
So, of course, there will be people. I mean, it's interesting you say you kind of always knew. You know, you approached adolescence knowing that this was your... kink, your thing. But there will be people, I think, who don't live the lifestyle like you used to. There will be people who do just kind of perhaps explore this world at the weekend. And I guess that's where our next guest comes in, really. Kitten Sky is from a company called Brighton Filth. And Kitten, am I right in saying you organise events?
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Yes, I run Brighton Filth. And it's a monthly fetish event in Brighton.
And so the people who come to your events, are they people who are living the lifestyle like Stu, or are they more people who are, I kind of want to say trying it out, but you know what I mean, who are kind of just sort of experimenting?
They are both. Everyone is welcome, as long as they're respectful.
And am I right in saying you used to, back in the day, own a kind of dungeon bar in Brighton?
I did, yes. It was kitted out with the best equipment, and it was more for people to just come and try it out and see what they thought.
When you say equipment, can you elaborate a little, please?
Well, crosses that you can be tied to, cages that you can be put into, things that you could be strung up on.
Oh, I'm just thinking health and safety.
I know. I was thinking the same thing.
Well, so everyone would have somebody, if you're going to play, you'll have someone who's in charge of you, and it's their job to look after you.
Oh, like a minder.
You like a minder.
Like when you start school and someone shows you where the school dinners are. Yeah, just a little buddy.
Like a sex dinner lady.
Yes.
If you are just sort of exploring, though, and trying things out, you know, you might not want to kind of go public with that. So how would you control, when you have the dungeon bar, when you do these events, how do you make sure that whatever goes on behind closed doors yeah, stays in the dungeon?
Well, we have very strict rules about photography. No photography, unless it's our photographer, which we sometimes do for special occasions. And, I mean, everyone's there for the same reason. No one's there to go and then run and tell everyone that you were there.
No.
They're there for their own exploring.
Like Stu, did you always know... So what would you say your... Well, we kind of... straddling kink and fetishes here, aren't we? What would you say your thing is?
Well, I'm a sub, which everyone's always surprised at because I think they assume that I'd be dominant because I'm running the event.
Yeah.
but I'm a sub, so all sorts of BDSM, some pain. I didn't know I was going to have to talk about my fetishes.
No, but like Stu, did you know kind of always...
Yeah, sort of. They're always inside of me. I don't see it as I found fetish. Mm. I found fetish when I was already a kinkster, if that makes sense. I finally found, like, my world where I belonged.
And the people who come along, say someone turns up and it's the first time they've been to an event. I mean, they must be nervous. I mean, what sort of people come along? Would we be surprised, do you think?
I think you'd be surprised. I think people think it's going to be so much scarier. Mm. And the people that come are going to be scary. And actually, it's your neighbour.
Mm. Alison's neighbour.
That is actually quite scary.
It's actually Alison's neighbour.
But you know what I mean? It's all of us. It's where just people, you know, with regular jobs, with regular lives. And this is a part of our personalities and something that we're passionate about.
I imagine as well in Brighton there is a big community of fetishists, is there?
Yeah, there's a really, really strong community and there's lots of events popping up even more now than ever. And we get people coming down here as well. I get people coming from London and all over for a dirty weekend in Brighton.
Because you were running some, you were running some Killing Kittens nights as well, weren't you?
That's sort of how I started to bring my professional life and my passionate life together.
And we found out actually in one of our very first shows where the phrase "Killing Kittens" comes from. I've never forgotten that.
I have. I can't remember.
Every time you have an orgasm, a kitten dies.
Apparently so. It's like a kind of kinky version of not believing in fairies.
Yeah. I had actually forgotten that.
Actually, I've never forgotten that.
Where my name came from.
Oh,
I thought it might be. Where. When is the next Brighton Filth event then? Have you got anything planned?
Yes, it's this Friday.
There you go. What are you doing this Friday?
Ali's got her trousers.
There's still time for people to get involved. They just need to make sure they message me so I can go through rules and club etiquette with them. And then we can get them set up and ready to come this Friday night if they want to.
When you say etiquette, then, what are the rules? What are the do's and don'ts if you go along to a fetish night?
Big ones are no touching without asking.
So consent.
We're very big on.
Right.
No involving yourself in a scene, where a scene is where three people are playing or more people are playing. There's no, you can't just go up and involve yourself. That's very bad etiquette.
No butting in.
Yeah, no butting in. No involving someone in a scene without asking. So no pulling someone into the scene. Things like that.
But what's interesting again?
A lot about boundaries.
Sort of boundaries, yeah. But again, it sounds like a really safe environment, maybe safer than more conventional clubs and nights where there are no rules.
That's what I always say. I've been groped more in a club on West Street than I ever have at a fetish event.
What happens if people don't play by the rules?
You whip them.
Well, no.
They enjoy that.
Exactly. You get people doing it on purpose.
Yeah, that wouldn't work at a fetish night.
No, we have very strict policies. Everyone who comes will have been sent the rules, so they all know of the rules. So there's no saying, oh, we didn't know about that, and they will be asked to leave. And the person who has been bothered will be looked after, whatever that means. But it happens so rarely. I've been running, it's our third birthday in March, and we've had a handful of problems.
It's interesting as well, both you, Kitten, and Stu, both use the word community.
Yeah.
And it does feel like that. Just listening to both of you talk, it's like it's almost like a club that you become a member of and you're kind of all going to abide by the rules together.
Yes, I think we have to. We have to make sure that we're safe and make sure we're looking after each other.
Mm. It must be hard to find a venue, though. I mean, when you ring somewhere up and say, "Oh, I'd like to book a function room for a party," I mean, how do you explain what it is you're going to be
doing? How much
doing?
Ahead? Yeah,
you'd be surprised how many get in touch with me.
Really?
Yes.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. Kitten, just give us that website if people want to find out more.
Just they can find me on Facebook, Brighton Self, so facebook.co.uk/Brighton Self. And the email's on there. They can chat to me on there. I've even got my number up there. So.
I'm getting it. Thank you for joining us. Stu, you know what I wanted to ask
you?
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. Bringing it back to kind of fetishes. Has a fetish ever shocked you?
Yeah. Yeah, many. Like, I have to be a little bit careful because I feel judgmental when I...
It's hard, isn't it? Because I know you say... Yeah, but
we didn't want to kink shame.
We're not kink shaming, but in terms of you were like... Because I guess a lot of fetishes, we can kind of see where they came from. Maybe, you know, nanny wore red lipstick.
Right.
So you always love red lipstick. I'm saying nanny. I mean, like, any of us
it's
nanny.
Not quite that simple. Yeah.
You know what I mean. Yeah. But is there something you're just like, I can't, I'm not judging people, but you can't understand?
Yeah. I'll give you one example. This came up recently, and I was suddenly reminded of it. But I was speaking to a professional dominatrix, a person who's been doing it for a very long time. Lives a double life. She's an amazing, amazing person. And she has regular clients who will ask her to do unusual things, things that aren't unusual to me.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for laughing at. But one of the ones that surprised me the most is that she had a client, and I have, like I said when I mentioned this before, I have permission to talk about this. She has a client who will invite her over and buy a fish's Captain Birdseye shepherd's pie, frozen, and she will microwave it and then sit on it. And that's it. Then she leaves.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, what is that then? Is that a thing for beards? Is it Captain Birdseye? Is it the food? Is it the microwave? What is the actual fetish there?
I've got no idea. Like, I can't...
I tell you, that has offended me. Because I hate waste with food. You know that, Ali. And that's...
Do you think sometimes the fetishes relate back to something in childhood? I mean, I know that wouldn't be the case for everyone. The only reason I say that is we had a guest on, again, one of our early shows, and I'll never forget, it was off air, I think she told us this, but she was talking about different fetishes, and she was saying, like, there's quite a big thing for Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, that kind of thing happens occasionally. Like, there is a theory, which has some scientific evidence as well, that something associated to your first ever sexual feeling will...
Yeah,
become kind of like exaggerated throughout your life. So some scientists put this to the test. This is absolutely true. What they did was they allowed some rats, some male rats to mature. And for their first sexual encounter, when they were introduced to the female rats, they put on a small rubber jacket. I know this sounds stupid, right? I promise this is true. Then after that, the male rat wearing the jacket had its first sexual encounter, and then it was discovered afterwards that every time the jacket was introduced into the rat's pen, it would become sexually aroused.
Who made the jacket?
I want to know.
Where do you buy a rat jacket?
Where do you get a jacket for rats?
Wow. Listen, I'd love to hear from anyone listening this evening
who's got a tiny little jacket.
Yeah. If you know we could buy a rat jacket, please do call. No, seriously, how would you react if a partner told you they had a particular kink or fetish? I mean, it's interesting, Stu, you were saying that people in the community tend to kind of gravitate towards each other. But what if that doesn't happen? What if you're not on the scene as such, but you just have this thing that you're particularly into? How do you have that conversation with somebody you meet?
And that someone brings it out in you. Because I'm, that's what I'm intrigued about as well. People finding their thing in their 30s or older.
Live and local. After the Watershed with Alison Ferns and BB Lynch.
We can now talk to Dr. Zoe Strimple, a journalist, writer and commentator and historian of gender and relationships in modern Britain. Dr. Zoe, thank you so much for chatting to us today.
Pleasure. Gosh. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Where are you? Sounds like there's a lot going on.
It's a hot tub.
I can't tell you where I am.
It's not very exciting,
and it has nothing to do with pink.
Okay. But it's still quite intriguing, nevertheless.
Well, I hope that you can actually still hear me through
yeah.
it.
Yeah, we can.
Let me know if there's a problem. Okay, good.
Do you think we've got kinkier as a society, as a nation, in recent years?
Absolutely. And the simple reason for that is that it's no longer associated with shame, embarrassment, consequences, punishment, all the things that used to kind of absolutely threaten people who had kinks in the past. I think, you know, perhaps more the distant past. But so I think that the fact that all these strictures on what you can be and sexually have been sort of lifted, I think that people are absolutely, you know, completely therefore coming out with cultivating and sort of developing the kinky side of themselves that they that would have stayed hidden in many cases before, I think.
You did, hi Zoe, it's BB. You did, a great woman's late, and I love this quote, there's a price to pay if you're not kinky enough for a woman.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I do now think that what's really interesting, what's happened with sex and sexual culture because of online dating and porn, the kind of fact that both of those things have sort of taken off at the same time, is that there's a real flip now, and it's like, you know, sex itself is just boring. So you know, you not only have to kind of conform to various sort of porn tableau, but you have to show that you're kind of, there's also almost like a political aspect to it of being super progressive, which is all about being, you know, what the American sex podcaster Dan Savage calls GGG, good, giving and game. So if you're just someone who likes to just sort of lie on your back and think of England or whatever, even if you like doing that, I think now that's feeding into a framework where that's just seen as almost sort of politically regressive as well as sexually regressive.
But maybe that's going to be the new kink.
Vanilla, the new kink. I love that. I don't think we're there yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody was making... somebody was finding a way to make that kinky. I'm not sure that the vanilla thing would be kinky, but I do think that, you know, we already kinkify certain ideas of innocence. You know, if you're someone who's a little bit prudish, maybe like a school teacher, you know, the sort of those tropes of the sort of prudish, slightly puritanical, innocent, whether that's young or as a school teacher dominatrix style, although obviously that has its own sexual connotations. I do think there are ways of sexualizing absolutely everything.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting that there might be a sort of swing back in the other direction, and suddenly kind of missionary position becomes a sort of almost like a vintage or a kind of a heritage kink. I don't know.
It's like 70s porn, isn't it? That came back.
Exactly. Well, the 70s were really racy, actually. I mean, if you know, like me,
I don't remember them. Sorry.
No, I don't remember them either. But as a historian, I've spent a lot of time looking at magazines from the 1970s of various types. And I mean, the 70s were more prudish now in many ways. I mean, there were sort of full page ads for fertilizer in the Times featuring completely naked women, and you know, so actually,
fertilizer.
Yeah, 70s porn, but yeah.
Wow.
Fertilizer needed a naked woman to sell in 1972 at the time.
Gosh.
So So in a so that's actually an interesting thing. Is like how where have we come? Like have we become more? You know, are we actually so wild now? And I think, as I said, we have become, we have allowed our kinks to come out. We've sort of almost made it a sort of point of pride. But does that mean our spirit is actually more kinky than it was in the 70s? And I think actually probably not.
Yeah.
Where will we end up? I tell you what, I'm definitely up for hosting the first ever vanilla party.
Oh, you must.
I'll let you know where and when. Dr. Zoe Strimple, thank you so much. It's interesting what Zoe was saying about, you know, how fetishes and kinks have changed over history, and whether we will sort of see, as people become so kind of more open about talking about stuff, whether we'll then see it kind of go the other way.
I mean, this isn't like, you know, a direct correlation I get at all, but do you remember when there was the whole real ladette movement?
Yeah.
And then it slightly got straighter.
Yeah.
You know, it was that was frowned upon after a while. Did I ever tell you about the Corduroy Club?
No.
Stu?
No.
Okay. So I worked on a show called Carnal Knowledge. Graham Norton's first show. I'm just going to put that out there. And I wrote it anyway, co-wrote. And I was interviewing someone, like a researcher interview, just to get him ready for his, you know, his bit on the show. And he was from the Corduroy Club. And members of the Corduroy Club are aroused by corduroy.
Oh.
And so I was talking to him, and it's really hard to not use the word corduroy when you're talking to someone from the Corduroy Club.
Tricky.
About how, so I was just talking about, you know, thick striped kind of cotton. I didn't know what corduroy is, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Corduroy Club.
You see, I used to do a late night radio show years ago, and there was a guy who would sometimes phone in, or people would phone and say they'd seen him, and his thing was warm car bonnets. And he, Stu's nodding. Yeah. Was it you? Was it Stu? But that
was. Do you not recognise my voice?
Yeah, that was his thing.
Warm car.
So he would wait in car parks, and he would wait till somebody drove in, and then as soon as they'd left their car, he knew obviously the engine would still be warm, and he would relieve himself.
Well, we've all heard the exhaust pipe stories, haven't we?
No.
Yes, we have.
I haven't.
I'm going to mime it.
Oh, like right in an exhaust pipe.
Yeah. Well, what you're talking about is the exact point where it crosses the line when you involve somebody else's stuff without their permission.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Even if it's something as simple as rubbing
it's
their
my
car bonnet.
Stuff.
Yeah.
It's my stuff.
Oh yeah, it's my Skoda car bonnet. Yeah. Thank you. Hands off. Going back to what she said though about the fact that, you know, more people are more comfortable with talking more openly about their fetishes. Will that not take away a little bit of the buzz? Because isn't the whole point that you kind of want to keep it underground?
Yes. Speaking personally, yes. My I'm slightly cut from a different cloth from most other people in the community.
Corduroy.
Corduroy, exactly. I'm cut from thicker pipes, I guess. Thicker piping. My personal feeling is that it should be private and it should be protected. And while I completely understand, I see both sides of the argument about people going out and being progressive and reassuring each other. As soon as it goes mainstream, it's over.
But that's, you know, what I meant about vanilla being the new kink.
Like, go back.
You'd return it, yeah.
Annabelle Knight joins us now, a sex and relationships expert. Annabelle, thanks so much for coming on the programme. Obviously, we have all, I think, learnt a lot this evening about fetishes and kinks. And Stuart, who joins us, he was saying how he kind of always knew that that was sort of his thing. But what if you don't realise that that's your thing until a little bit later on in life? How on earth do you broach that subject with a partner?
Well, it can be extremely tricky because it raises all sorts of questions for your partner, along the lines of, well, have you ever been satisfied with our sex life? What does this say about me? What does this say about us? And what does this say about our relationship and the intimacy we've shared? The only advice I can really give to anyone who's going through something that is similar to this is that the sooner you address the issue, the easier it is. And it's really, really true. The longer you leave it, the more difficult it is, and the more gravitas those questions tend to have. So the best thing you can do is, if you genuinely, you know, it has just dawned on you that perhaps a particular kink or a particular fetish is really your thing, is to just be honest about it and say, look, this wasn't something I was particularly aware of, but
over time, it's become more obvious to me, and go through that journey together.
Annabelle, hello.
Hello. Hi.
That's kind of easier said than done, though, isn't it? Let's role play.
So it is completely easier said than done.
So I'm your wife.
Oh, I could only wish.
I'm your wife and you're my husband. And what do you want? What's your kink? What's your fetish? What do you want to break to me?
I think it's going to have to be leopard print.
Okay.
Okay. You're in. PB loves
there you
a bit
go.
Of leopard
that was
print.
The easiest
I
conversation.
I can see why we're together.
But it is tough, isn't it? And also, I guess with any sex advice as well, never say after sex anything you want to talk about.
You want choose to kind moment. Of... remove the fetish from your current sexual scenarios. And yes, of course, it's easier said than done, but there is a way to do it. And the only way it's easier said than done, but it is grab the ball by the horns, because there is only one way to skin a cat in this scenario, and that is by being honest.
Bulls, cats, what other animal are you going to throw in?
I know. And well, your options are that you either don't address it and you leave it and you let it fester and you become sexually unhappy, which has a knock-on effect to your outside relationship, or you invite your partner to join that journey with you. And of course, as the partner who's being told about the fetish, it's so important to keep an open mind, gauge the intensity of your partner's fetish. So it could be something on a small level that isn't completely necessary, or it could be something that they've developed that is an absolute must. And then realize that you can incorporate fetish into a happy, healthy, and very kind of normative sex life without it becoming weird or uncomfortable.
But what if one of the couple absolutely can't accept it? So you've got up until that point, the relationship on every other level was fabulous, even sexually was fabulous. And now this fetish has come in, or this kink has come in. I mean, that must break people up.
I imagine it does. But the way I work is I work in a very solution focused way. So if a couple say to me, and they come in and they say, this is our situation, we are completely at odds, but ultimately we want to be together, I will do my utmost to give them the skills and the tools and the mindset to be able to work towards that goal. It doesn't always work out, because, you know, life isn't completely problem free. But the best thing people can do is really take to this new life and see it as a new opportunity for exploring a different sexual avenue. And if it really doesn't work for you, or if it is an absolute no off the bat, but you still want to stay together, you have to explore different sexual scenarios that might involve another person or a separate entity. And all of those questions need to be answered, but they need to be answered after careful consideration, with a lot of information and a lot of open and honest conversation between the couple.
Have you worked with couples that have kind of found their thing later in life? I like that. I like the idea that, so if one partner is saying, actually, I like this, and the other person's going, actually, okay, let's see, and then they're really into it, that's a whole new chapter.
It is. The most kind of prevalent example I can think to give you is, I had a couple a year or two ago, and they'd been together over a decade, and they enjoyed watching porn together. And it dawned on the one part of the couple that he enjoyed actually not the pornography. He enjoyed the idea of imagining his wife engaging in sexual intercourse with the man in the porn that they were watching. And that posed so many questions and problems for them, because she didn't want to have sex with anyone else. She wanted to have sex with her husband, and that was that. So they had lots and lots of issues to overcome, and things to talk about, and ways and means that they were going to make this work for them as a couple, which actually involved swinging in the end. And they both really enjoyed it, and they don't do it all the time. They don't even do it kind of once a year. It's more like a scratch and itch kind of thing that they really look forward to as a couple, and then that carries them through the rest of their sex life.
I suppose the worry is as well, if your partner does tell you about their fetish, their kink, and you're not up for it, then, you know, they might look to have that satisfied elsewhere. I mean, so during the week when I was doing my research, I contacted a dominatrix.
Did you?
And obviously she charges for certain services. And by the looks of her lifestyle, she does very well out of it as well. Although this did make me smile. Obviously she's from Brighton, so she's not just a dominatrix.
Yeah.
She's a vegan dominatrix. Wow. Of course she is. I thought, of course
must
you
be
are.
A lot of pleather in her.
Exactly,
wardrobe.
pleather whips.
Yeah. You'd have to go pleather.
Pleather whips. That's my new drag act now.
That's it. Pleather whips. and obviously, if you then find out that your partner has been indulging in that sort of thing and they're paying for it with someone else, that's a whole other issue, isn't it? Right there.
As I've said a million times, anyone getting together, relationships, it's a miracle that any it works at all. And if we bring sex into it, Annabelle, how does it all work?
Well, for, with that example, I mean, that happens more often than I would like it to. In my ideal world, everyone is honest with everyone else and we're all open-minded and we all really try to, you know, get on with things and be accepting. But that is a pipe dream for the majority of people. If you find yourself in it's leading a double life, and it ultimately is not conducive to overall happiness. It causes stress. Stress attacks your CD4 cells, which affect your immune system. You're more likely to get ill. You're less likely to want to be sexually active with your partner through that. So it's kind of like a downward spiral.
Do you think that, sorry, go on.
Well, I was just going to finish off by saying it's a downward spiral for your personal relationship with your partner, but it can be a kind of a very motivating upward spiral for your own personal relationship with yourself when it comes to sex. So it's a difficult act to balance.
I think we should ban sex.
Do you think that would make it just easier all around? Feet are a big thing.
In the
fetish community.
I've got a great arm.
Oh, I'll tell you something now. I listened to a podcast, my friend listened to this podcast and said, oh, you have to go on this website called WikiFeet. It's the who's who of celebrity foot fetish. So I went on it and typed my name in for a joke, and I am on there.
You're not. I'm looking you up, Annabelle. Really? That is a claim to fame, isn't it?
In what way?
At first I was mortified, but any picture that I've shared online that has my feet in, has been kind of redistributed on this website. And I used to have a really good rating. I don't know what it is anymore. I'm typing as we speak because I really want to.
But did you know that your feet were special?
They're not. They're really not special. They are, if anything, under par. I just must take very flattering photographs of my feet.
Your lips are well.
I want to see what your foot rating is.
Is it the arch? What do you think it is, Annabelle?
I think it's the flat, square, slightly mannish appearance of my feet that really does it for some people.
Gosh. Annabelle, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Annabelle Knight, a sex and relationships expert. So one thing that I wasn't familiar with is this idea of having fetishes that aren't strictly sexual. Have you heard of this? Apparently there's something that's known as a whisper fetish. It's a phenomenon called ASMR.
Please don't play anything.
No, which apparently is short for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. So I'm going to play you.
Oh, okay.
A few little sounds. Apparently these sounds might, if this is your thing, cause you to have a bit of a tingling sensation on your spine. So it normally begins on the scalp, moves down the back of your neck and upper spine, and as I say, it's triggered.
This sounds like a stroke.
It's not that. It's triggered by certain sounds, okay? So you could do join in along at home, won't you, children? Okay, ready? This is the first sound. I'm not sure if I should tell you what. I won't tell you what the sound is until we see whether or not it triggers you in any way.
Stu, join in.
Okay.
Doing it for me.
It's giving me an anxiety attack. I can feel my.
For me,
chest
it sounds
tighten.
Like somebody eating.
Yeah, badly.
It sounds like a slinky going down the stairs.
It does.
Oh, it's like I'm on a train and the person opposite me has just got their egg mayonnaise sarnies. Do you know what I mean? It's like, no.
What was it?
A foil.
Oh, tin. Oh,
yeah, tin foil crinkling of.
Okay.
Okay, have a listen to this one. See if this does it for you.
Okay.
Anything?
It's like a wind tunnel.
I think it's a skateboarder.
Right, what is actually brilliant about these sound effects, it's literally our producer, Anthony. He sat himself in a studio earlier, crinkling up foil and stroking things for that last sound
effect.
That
was stroking.
That was stroking.
I don't want to hear
what
anymore.
What was he stroking?
No one knows.
We won't ask.
No one cares.
Let's not go there.
No one needs to know.
Okay, this is the final one. Mm-hmm. Let's see if this does it for us.
Birmingham 0, Bolton 1, Bristol City 2. QPR 1, Hull 2, Rotherham 2.
I quite like that. It was Rotherham. Oh, it was Rotherham that got
he
me.
He had me at Rotherham.
West Brom 2.
I'll tell him to stop.
Nottingham
no,
Forest
I'm going to put it on repeat. 2. I like it.
You do not like it.
I do. It. I know that one. Out of all three of them, look, Stuart's agreeing.
Rotherham.
He's 5'4". 4'5".
When I get home tonight, he's going to be stood there and he'll pull
Rotherham. Or he'll be in Rotherham.
Oh, yeah, one or the other. Yeah, I've never come across anything like that before. Whisper fetish. Yeah. Apparently there are lots of people online making YouTube videos, creating these sorts of sounds for people to enjoy. It's a new budding community.
It's wildly popular. In fact, people use it to help them fall asleep. It's not necessarily a sexual thing. ASMR has been around for a few years now. It's like people, you can listen to people paint, for example. You'll listen to the paintbrush on their canvas, and it can be incredibly soothing for
what
people.
What happened to sheep?
They went to Rotherham.
Yeah, everyone's gone to Rotherham. Listen, please, thank you so much for everyone who has contributed to today's show. We really do appreciate it. Thank you, Stu, for being so open and so brilliant at discussing your lifestyle. There's only really one thing left to say.
What's that?
Happy Valentine's,
oh,
Bebe,
happy darling,
for tomorrow. What are your plans?
Oh, well, I, Bebe Lynch, am going on a fearless flirting tour.
What is that?
I'm going to learn how to become a flirting machine.
Really?
Yes.
Where are you going to do that?
Rotherham.
Rotherham.
What are your plans?
I'm going to go to yoga on my own.
Oh, this is lovely. What a beautiful story.
No. I'm going to cook romantic meals.
Can you cook?
Not really, no. So we'll probably end up getting takeaway, but it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Live and local.
After the Watershed with Alison Ferns and Bebe Lynch.